Hey there, cats and kittens. It's Brian from The Commercial Break, the mediocre comedy podcast where my best friend Chrissy and I attempt to make sense of the world. We talk about the absurd, the ridiculous, and the stuff no one asked for, like internet weirdos, pickup artists, and why everyone is obsessed with crystals and colonics. It's all gotta stop. The show is free, it's frequent, and it's probably not for everyone. You can go to tcbpodcast.com, subscribe at youtube.com/thecommercialbreak, or check out the show wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll see you on the next commercial break, and best to you.
I mean, there's a lot of questions that I do have about Drake, and everybody, like, I understand if fans are excited, you know, about Drake and what he's going to do and his potential, because it's all there. He has it all. But there's a lot that we don't know about him, you know, and we didn't learn a whole lot, you know, him winning one game last year. You know, I don't love his mechanics. I think they're still sloppy. It led to some of the miscues the other night. I don't understand why Drake looks good in the joint practices and he borderline stinks in the two preseason games. So, you know, I'm very much a makeup quarterback guy in terms of, you know, being a maniac, being fanatical about being a perfectionist about what you do. And I'm not saying Drake doesn't have that. I just don't know if he has that. Like, I didn't like his post-game reaction to the fumble against the Commanders. He just kind of, like, you know, shrugs his shoulders. And because that was a dumb play by him. It was dumb.
Greg Bedard there from Boston Sports Journal and his podcast discussing his concerns with Drake May and getting very specific about them. Megan Ottolini here with John Lyons says, we reach high noon here, as our buddy Adam Jones likes to say. Jones and Keefe are both taking a couple days off here at the end of the week, so we are filling in for you. And Greg Bedard, I don't know where to start with that evaluation of Drake May. I'll start at the very last piece, because I think that's something that feels a little more like leadership attitude oriented to me than the mechanics and all of the football evaluations of Drake May. The way that he reacted after that idiotic fumble turnover that he had in the first game, the first preseason game rather, against the Commanders, I didn't really read into. I'm going to be honest. Like, I'm a big body language person, and I definitely look at attitude and how people carry themselves and how their teammates respond to them, especially a young quarterback. I don't think Drake is a dink. And I don't think that, like, he carried himself in a way where he's like, that's not a big deal. Vrabel reamed him out after that turnover on the broadcast and on the TV broadcast from WBZ and then after the game. And so if you want Drake May to get out there and Chris Sale himself and be like, I'm horrible, I'm embarrassed of myself, blah, 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 that's your taste. That's what you're looking for from a young quarterback. I would guess that Drake knows that that was stupid and that he has to be better.
And I think the thing to look at is, how did he respond to it? Like, after that turnover against Washington, he responded by leading a touchdown drive. And it wasn't all perfect, but he led a touchdown drive. Even you go to the Minnesota game, he had a high overthrow that was almost intercepted, another high throw, they punt, and he responded to it by leading a touchdown drive against the Vikings. So I think that's the bigger thing to watch. Like, I mean, if you remember, Mac Jones is doing breathing exercises on the sidelines after, you know, drives there. As long as you're avoiding that, like, I think there were times last year where May was trying to do too much in a bad situation. And we kind of discussed this yesterday where, you know, the pick at the end of the Rams game or the end of the Titans game.
He was the only thing that could operate on offense.
He was trying to do way too much. And I think maybe there's still a little bit of that inside him where he wants to do a little bit too much at times. And I think you saw that on the turnover against Washington. Just go down and take the sack. Like, you're all set. Instead, it was like he was either kind of trying to throw it away. Maybe he saw some at the last second, but he was trying to do too much. But again, he responded to it by leading a touchdown drive, right? If he had come out and they had gone 3-and-out the next series, or if Minnesota, they had back-to-back 3-and-outs or back-to-back punts to start the game, I would be more concerned than, okay, he made a bad turnover against Washington and then bounced back. You don't want any turnovers, but how do guys respond? Because that was something, and not to bring up bad memories, but that was one of the issues with Mac Jones. He wouldn't just have one turnover. It would snowball into two or three. I mean, they played the Ravens in 2022. Yeah,
he was the epitome of letting a bad play or a bad snap turn into a bad series, turn into a bad quarter, turn into a bad half.
Right.
Like, exactly. I don't think Drake's like that.
I agree.
To what you just said. In terms of the evaluation of who he's been in the preseason, in training camp. Why do we focus so much on the preseason preseason game performances?
Because it's all people have to watch.
But it's not. Bedard was out in Minnesota.
Right. And there's some things in game speed that can't be replicated, right? Like how situations work out, guys are actually tackling to the ground. But to kind of your point, I think the most valuable thing the Patriots have had so far are the two joint practices.
Thank you.
Right, the Washington one. Well, I mean the two sets of the Washington ones, and then especially the Minnesota ones. Like, even though the Minnesota practices didn't go that well, I think there's a lot of value there, because I think that Minnesota defense, and I know they just traded Harrison Phillips yesterday, but there's value there because that Minnesota defense is probably the best defense you're going to face all season long, or at least for the first, say, month or so of the season, that's going to be the best defense. So there's value in learning, hey, what are they attacking about us? What are we not good at? And it, from all reports and all indications, Drake May held up really well in those practices. And then you and I were at the Washington ones where he was better than Jaden Daniels in that joint practice. Not that Daniels sucked, but May was better. The offense was good. Like, those to me are much more valuable than two series against mostly backups in a preseason. Not that the preseason games aren't valuable, but the joint practices, I think, are more so.
Overall, the media has been preaching this for years, and especially the beat writers, the people who are in there watching the team day in, day out, every freaking availability, watching every stupid injury report full of lies come out and having to post it for their outlet. Joint practices are the most indicative of where the team is. It's the closest you're going to see the scheme that they're implementing when they go 11v11 with the other team. You get to see how they match up in 1v1s with the true ones going against each other. If you think that he, quote, borderline stinks in the preseason game, I have to tell you that I don't think it matters that much. I really don't. Like, to me, the biggest question with Drake is, does he get too excited in these games? Is it where he's overthrowing Mac Hollins, who's 6'4", and then totally overthrowing Pop Douglas, who's like 5'8"? And is he too amped up? And is that going back to the experience level? And so there is something to be, I don't know, that you can earn, that you can gain from having him just be in these stadium situations, because he's only started 12 games last season as an NFL quarterback. But the joint practices are the thing, and Drake looks solid in the joint practices. He's looked good, even when the line has broken down around him. Like, he's been good. He's done what he's supposed to do. So maybe you don't like the mechanics. I'm not a quarterback. I'm not a throwing expert. So I'm not going to sit there and break down whether he still has a hitch or the little jump pass that he might throw at times. Like, I'm not going to, you can speak to that better than I can, John, if you think he has an issue with his mechanics. But if we're saying, like, he had a bad turnover in a preseason game and he had a couple accuracy issues to start the second preseason game, that doesn't make it doom and gloom for me. That doesn't make me sit here and go, I'm so worried about it. And also, who he is at the podium after the fact is unacceptable.
And I think some of this still is part of the learning process. Like, his offense at North Carolina, he was making like a couple reads and then the ball was coming out. And then last year, there were five guys out, but he was under so much pressure, he wasn't making three or four reads. Now he's actually doing that, because I know people have pointed to, well, he missed an open receiver for a touchdown in that series against Minnesota in the game, and that's true. What would worry me is if that happens again. Like, if he does that again tonight, or if he does that again against the Raiders.
Well, we don't know if we're going to see
right.
him tonight.
Or if he does
it
that.
It might be the Josh Dobbs show.
It might be. But that's, to me, what I would be thinking about. Like, if he misses somebody once and learns from it, fine. Because you can even, like, the turnover he had against Washington didn't have a turnover like that against Minnesota. That doesn't mean he's never going to turn the ball over again, but you want to see, are these guys progressing? Because that was one of the huge issues last year, Mego, and not just with Drake May. I mean, how many guys last year actually got better during the season? And how many guys kept making the same mistake after mistake after mistake, and it never got corrected?
That's a great question. Who did get better?
I think there were
the
three
season.
Guys last okay. year, if you want my opinion. May, Milton, besides, and Mapu. Those are May, the only guys that I'm like, they're a better
Milton,
player.
And Mapu.
And Mapu now is not
a total afterthought.
And he's not even on the field now. But those are the only three guys that I'm like, oh, they were noticeably better to me
what
at the
about
end of the year.
Antonio Gibson.
I thought he was kind of good. He was just good. Like, I thought he was pretty good at
I
the beginning of the year.
I thought he looked better at the end of the season.
And I think Stevenson looked a little worse. And so maybe my judgment is a little jaded on that. But, I mean, guys were making the same mistake And it was coaches, too, last. Like, how many times did they motion Jalen Polk in a block last year and he got blown up or false started? Like, this year, with, and this is where the Vrabel effect comes in, is those mistakes, I don't expect them to keep happening. Like, even the stunt thing that Will Campbell and Jared Wilson struggled with against Washington, I'm not saying that's never going to happen, but you're not going to see that every week like you saw Vidarian Lowe and DeMontre Jacobs last year getting beat around the edge every week because Alex Van Pelt wouldn't have guys in to help chip block ever.
I just want to sit here and spell out what the actual expectations for Drake are, because all I hear over the last week, we talked about it yesterday, is pump the brakes for Drake May. People in New England are too excited about him. He hasn't shown enough. He's really young, which I agree that he's really young and inexperienced. And then Greg Bedard, who's covered this team forever, saying that he has serious concerns about all these different aspects of Drake May, from his mechanics to who he is after the game. So tell me what you think he's going to be. You can tell me, is he going to have improved stats from Mac Jones 2021 season? Do you think the team gets to the playoffs because of him? Or do you think that he's lower than that and the entire offense spends another year suffering in the bottom quartile of the league?
I would like to see him be a little bit better than Mac Jones's rookie season. 3,800 yards, 22 touchdowns. I'd like May to be in that 3,800, 4,000 yards.
13 interceptions?
Right. So, and again, that was in 17 games. So if May throws 13 picks in 17 games, it would actually be kind of an improvement on a per-game basis.
Are you kidding? I would take that in a heartbeat.
So to me, that's, can he be a little bit better than Mac Jones? Because even for May, I know it's just technically his second year, but it's really like year one and a half, because he didn't start until week six last year. He didn't even play, like, he left the Jets game early, left the Bills game early. It's a new staff. He only started 26 games in college. Like, it's only really, to me, year one and a half. And I say that to say this, if he can, again, just be a little bit better than Mac Jones' rookie year. And remember how, and you touched on this yesterday, Mac kind of faded in that rookie year in December.
Oh, yeah.
Was not like...
The second Buffalo game, the
right,
Buffalo win.
He wasn't as good. Can May not fade? Can he be good all the way through week 18? Can he play well? And I'm not telling you he's going to have 17 good games, but can he play just as well in week four that he plays in week 15, right?
Well,
or better?
So when that happened in real time in 2021, I thought this is the biggest example of the rookie wall, where Mac played up through the championship game with Alabama and then goes right into the combine, the draft, and then immediately gets into OTAs and rookie mini camp with the Patriots. And I thought this kid's just burnt out. And now in hindsight, I think Jones was more correct when he said the rest of the league started to figure him out pretty early on and his limitations. And he was such an unknown coming in. And now it's like, okay, this is the tendencies. This is what he's doing in Josh McDaniel's system. With Drake, I think that's such a huge part of when you hear about how McDaniels wants him to be able to pick apart defenses. It's because he can't get through 17 games just taken off running for first downs.
And I think if you could, like, if Mac was the fifth quarterback taken, it was almost like he was there, the Patriots need, and I'm not saying they didn't like him, but like, he, whereas May, the baseline talent is a lot higher. Like, that's a guy that you mentioned earlier, him and Daniels, May conceivably could have gone second overall in that draft. He went third. Like, the baseline talent is higher. That's why, to me, it should be better than what you saw out of Mac Jones in 21. And you could make the case, hey, maybe Mac had a better head coach at the time. Maybe his offensive line was a little better. But I don't know. That 2021 offense, I don't look at that and say, oh, wow, that's a lot better than what the Patriots have now. Like, they had Jacoby Myers. He was probably better than anyone you have right now, depending on Diggs' health. But I don't know. Like, Hunter Henry is very similar to what he was then. Stevenson and Henderson is probably better than Damian Harris and Stevenson. So I just think it's very similar what he has to what Mac had. And I think that's why, to me, the baseline should be, can you be a little bit better than Mac Jones? And I think that would translate to 8 or 9 wins.
Don't you think that defense was better?
I think
the
that 21 defense
was better than this year's. I mean, we don't totally know.
It's tough because last year had so many guys from 23 and yet they got worse. So I think this year's defense could be better because I think Barmore could be really good if he's healthy, and the combination of Gonzalez and Davis could be really, really good. But I don't know, that defense still had Devin McCourty, right? Like that was still had some guys on it. But that was, remember, like the end of Dont'a Hightower. He wasn't that good anymore, sorry to say, and some other guys. So I don't know. That to me might be a toss-up. Like I might even take this year's defense, but I'd have to see it first.
617-779-7937 if you want to call in and discuss Drake May, the expectations, all the pump the brake talk, and are you concerned about how he carried himself at the podium after that bad turnover? Once again, I'm not. But this is something, that's one more thing on this Lions. This is something that a lot of people have been quietly kind of bringing up over and over. Like that Drake didn't talk at the end of the season last year on locker cleanout day, which
and
was
then he didn't go to Vrabel's introductory press conference, right? Well, wasn't there some people
was,
said that
he too? Was getting engaged?
I know, but it was brought
but
up.
But the locker room cleanout thing, like as a reporter who was there, that was annoying because he's the team leader and you want to talk to him. But at the same time, like I could also attribute that to miscommunications. It was a chaotic time for the franchise. The head coach had just gotten fired. Like I don't hold the rookie quarterback totally accountable for that. Maybe I'm a softy for that reason, but I don't like put that entirely on him. I'm just not at the point where like I'm gonna crucify the kid for not being sorry enough, not Chris Sailing himself enough at the podium.
And it doesn't mean he's not taking it seriously, because like I said, he didn't make the same mistake. He bounced back, led a touchdown drive, and didn't make that mistake again after. Like there's plenty of guys that kind of shrug their shoulders, but then they make the same mistake again. Like just because he's not freaking out doesn't mean he's not taking it seriously and not correcting it.
Yeah, I don't have as big a problem with that. Really quickly, I know we're going to do a little Kiefer Madness John Lyons edition after this break. There is this little piece of information that came out for the preseason game tonight that we haven't hit on, which is that Javon Baker is traveling with the team, so would indicate that he's probably playing in the game tonight. My biggest takeaway from that, Efton's made the team.
Yeah.
Efton is on the team.
I think their question
Baker
now,
is fighting for some kind of special team spot. Efton is on the team. That's what it says to me. Efton's got a minor injury, has been out of practice all week. They don't need to see any more from him. They love the kid.
I think their discussion internally now is, do we keep seven receivers and could Baker be one of them? It's not Chisholm or Baker anymore. I mean, I think Chisholm is squarely on the roster as the sixth guy.
Yeah, so we'll see from Javon Baker. Really weird to try to figure out what's going on with Jalen Polk and Kendrick Bourne, guys who have had injuries from your wide receiver group. TBD with those guys, if they're going to put one of them on IR or if there's going to be a trade that's coming up. I know there are people on social media who are like dying for a trade between San Francisco and Kendrick Bourne because San Francisco has so many receivers who are injured, but Bourne's also mysteriously injured too.
Yeah.
After that in-stadium practice, and we haven't seen him at all. So a lot of weird stuff going on with the wide receiver room. We'll continue to follow that and any breaking news that comes out with the Patriots in terms of trades or what have you.
Hey there, cats and kittens. It's Brian from The Commercial Break, the mediocre comedy podcast where my best friend Chrissy and I attempt to make sense of the world. We talk about the absurd, the ridiculous, and the stuff no one asked for, like internet weirdos, pickup artists, and why everyone is obsessed with crystals and colonics. It's all gotta stop. The show is free, it's frequent, and it's probably not for everyone. You can go to tcbpodcast.com, subscribe at youtube.com/thecommercialbreak, or check out the show wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll see you on the next commercial break, and best to you.
It's time for Kiefer Madness.
Kiefer Madness!
Richard Kiefer, I think it is. Rich Kiefer.
Who is that?
How are you doing, ladies and gentlemen? My name is Joshua Adams.
What now? It's Kiefer Madness.
Where's Kiefer?
Where is he?
Where's Kiefer?
Where is Kiefer?
Hey, Kiefer, you're a dude.
I was doing Junko Inoshima from Danganronpa.
I'm a firm believer in UFOs and Sasquatch.
That's funny.
Yo, Kiefer Madness is so hit or miss.
Kiefer's a nice guy.
Kiefer's a nice guy.
Okay.
Kiefer Madness?
It's Kiefer Madness on WEEI.
I bring it.
All right, this is going to be interesting. This is our own little attempt at Kiefer Madness, led by John Lyons, who I texted at about, 9:45 last night after I had gone out to dinner and indulged in a martini and said, can you handle Merger Madness? And then put my phone down and 10 minutes later it was like, what is Merger Madness? And here we go.
Yeah, I actually Googled Merger Madness to make sure I wasn't missing
we
something.
We are doing Kiefer Madness.
Kiefer Madness.
And this is a South Shore edition that
yes,
you're bringing
because,
to us?
Yes, because you're not lucky enough to live on the South Shore, but I am. Zach Coe, who's filling in as a producer, as Billy Lanny just moved further on the South Shore down, I won't say the town name because I know you don't want fans stalking your front lawn. And Justin Turpin, running Twitch, also lives on the South Shore.
Before we get to this, what is the definition of the South Shore in your opinion?
So I don't draw a firm line on it. It's like kind of like Brockton, Bridgewater, Abington out to like Plymouth-ish, kind of that area, general swamp.
So you don't have to be on the shore?
No, not directly on the shore. Like I grew up in Abington and it's not on the beach. I actually hate the beach.
And does South Shore start directly after Dorchester?
No, I put South
is
Shore.
Is Milton South Shore?
No, I put it like below Quincy. Like some people include Quincy. I'd put it like kind of, because to me, when I get up to Quincy, Milton, like I'm in the Boston area at that
okay.
point.
So. My other South Shore people, do you agree with this assessment behind the glass?
I always assume so. I grew up in Malden, and for me, once I came out of the tunnel, it was all the South Shore.
Okay.
I was one of those stubborn North Shore-ish guys. But I was in Quincy for 10 years, and I just assumed that was the South Shore.
Yeah, I mean,
more
like,
so because it was, like I said, south of the city, and I was close to the water.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not anti-Quincy on the South Shore. I just never looked at it that way.
Yeah, I kind of looked at, like, Braintree as the northernmost barrier of the South
yeah,
Shore.
Yeah, I always looked at Braintree as the end, because Braintree Plaza was, like, bigger than anything else in the South Shore. So, with that in mind, our friend Billy Lanny, as I said, has just moved to the true part of the South Shore.
Even further south.
So, I picked up what I think are six beers Billy Lanny should try on the South Shore. There's a lot of good breweries on the South Shore. I've been to them several times.
Is Fitzy just sitting in every single one when you walk in?
Multiple.
There's just photos of Fitzy or like big paintings.
Two of these breweries have beers named after Fitzy.
Are you kidding me?
No, I'm not kidding at all. I swear to God. I've
what?
Had. I've drank them too.
I knew he had one season. I didn't know he had multiple.
Oh, yeah. So yeah,
that guy in his marketing. Like, yeah. I gotta figure it out. I gotta sit down with him sometime.
I know. Sometimes I'll see things like go viral, sports takes and stuff, and I'll be like, I thought of that a while ago. I gotta get more famous. Like, people gotta listen to me.
Beers named after. Yeah. Sorry, I keep interrupting.
That's okay. So a six-pack of beer from South Shore Brewery. So, Billy, you ready for this?
So these are the actual beer, not the brewery?
Both. I'm going to tell you the brewery and what to buy when you're there, okay? So, and this is in no particular order. I tried to mix it up. 10th District in Abington, great brewery. Got to get the vanilla porter there. Dark beer, heavy, tastes like you're drinking vanilla silk. Excellent.
That sounds gross.
No, it's good. Trust me.
It's supposed to be sweet. No offense to the brewery. The vanilla part, like, it reminds me of the, you know, the, you guys ever have that vodka that's the whipped, Pinnacle whipped vodka?
Oh yeah, Pinnacle's got all those flavors. Yep.
And it tastes like whipped cream or vanilla. That's what it immediately makes me think of.
Arguably, this is a top three beer I've actually ever had in my life.
Is it a subtle vanilla?
It's just enough that you taste the vanilla, but it doesn't overpower you. It's like the right amount. Yeah.
All right.
So it's really.
And you said it's a dark beer?
It is. Gotcha. It is. Like I said, try to mix it up. This is one you can have it all year round.
Can you give the percentages here?
This is ABV? 5%-ish. So it's not a super heavy dark one. I don't have all the percentages, but. So 10th District, Vanilla Porter. Again, top three beer I've actually ever had. Another one, Black Hat Brewery in Bridgewater, the Fuzzy Bunny Slippers IPA. You got to get that one. Nice little IPA. Not too heavy. I think that's in the sixes or something like that. You know, not too sweet, not too sour, nice mix. I like it a lot. So
Fuzzy Bunny Slippers, I immediately think of Christmas Story.
Yeah.
So I thought this was going to be more of like a seasonal.
No, they
like
do make good.
Thing.
So Black Hat makes a Christmas Amber and a Belgian Holiday Ale, two good holiday Christmassy beers, and they just built a new tap room. It's awesome there.
Where is this on the scale of light to dark?
It's more of the hazy-ish, I would say.
Somewhere. What does that mean?
Like, so you, like, if you hold your fingers to the glass, you can't see through.
Oh, like, you know what I mean? Okay. So it's very dense.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. It's not like over the top, but it's in that neighborhood.
There's what beer has become like a chemistry
experiment
of its own.
Snobby is what you want to say.
Well, and don't get me wrong. I'm happy to have like six Bud Lights like I did on Sunday last week. I don't have to have the craft beers, but
sweet
I like
sweet brag.
Yeah. Hey, whatever. No big deal. Shout out. Next one, Crew Brew in Raynham. This one's cool, Billy Lanny, because the owner looks just like Matthew Slater. But I don't like pumpkin beers, but they make six different varieties of pumpkin beers. So if you like pumpkin beers, go there in the fall, have one of their pumpkin beers. A couple of them are okay. Again, I don't like one of them. The brewer's wife carves pumpkins and puts them in the oven and then puts them in the beer vat case thing, whatever, and brews them as part of the beer.
The brewer's wife sounds like an excellent name for a brewery.
That's true. There is a brewery called the Girls
Brewery.
We're going over to the brewer's wife.
Yeah. All right.
And so 2/3 of the pumpkin ones you would recommend.
Yeah, and again, I'm not a big pumpkin beer guy, but they're solid.
Why? You too good for it? Because it's basic? It's for basic bitches?
No, it might just be healthy for me. There might be pumpkin in there somewhere. I can't risk that. Like blueberry beer, there might be blueberries. I can't risk that. You know?
Okay.
No, I don't like too fruity beers. I don't know.
I love a Wachusett blueberry.
Eh.
Yeah.
Next up, Vitamin C. This place does have a beer named after Fitzy, but the one I'm in, this is in Weymouth. Cool spot. Also, another tap room they just built in Plymouth, so also South Shore. The elusive New England IPA. Really good IPA, New England style. I'm a fan. I like it a lot. And again, that's a cool tap room, and they have a beer named after Fitzy, so Vitamin C. Great sandwiches at the Plymouth place. Number 5, Stellwagen. Stop me if you've heard this before, Mego. They have a beer named after Fitzy.
Stellwagen. Jesus Christ.
Stellwagen in Marshfield. Great tap room, nice little outside area. If you want something lighter, Billy Lanny, you know, you're hanging out on the South Shore, you drive to Marshfield, you know, maybe you're going to go to Cask and Flag and after, you don't want to get blasted, something a little lighter. Whale Watcher, Session IPA, a little lighter there. So lighter beer, pretty good. They also have a seasonal Fitzy beer as well. And then last one, this is I think this is the newest South Shore brewery. It's in Kingston, 42nd Brewing. Great atmosphere in there. Great people in there. I've been multiple times. Have a lot of fun. The Shipwrecked New England IPA. That's a good one there. So those are 6 beers that Billy Lanny should have now that he's moved to the real South Shore.
So I'm looking at 10th District Vanilla Porter.
Yep.
Black Cat Fuzzy Bunny Slippers.
Yep.
Have fun ordering that.
The pumpkin beer options at Crew Brew.
Any of them.
The Elusive IPA from Vitamin C.
Yep.
Whale Watcher from Stellwagen. Shipwrecked from 42nd Brewery.
Yes, and there are other good breweries on the South Shore, but those 6 beers kind of stood out to me.
All right, well, I'll let you know this. I always lean a little towards the lighter side of beer. And I've also, tried and enjoyed sours. I didn't even know that was a thing.
I'm not a huge sours guy.
But that falls under, like, the fruity side.
Yeah, that's, comes, like, that the only kind of beer that I really will have.
But most of these breweries have sours. Like, I know 10th District has sour. Like, so they all kind of make them now. But, yeah, those are...
I'm usually a American Pilsner light, half a dozen to a dozen Miller lights.
I don't know about you guys. If you include Sandwich on being on the South Shore, of course, Treehouse Brewery is the best brewery.
Sandwich?
No, I just do that just to include it.
I was like, that doesn't even make sense.
No, it's not at all. It's
do you claim Duxbury?
I don't. What do you guys think?
Those snobs out in Duxbury?
Well, I'm new to this, so I don't even know.
I think you include Duxbury.
Yeah, I feel like I could leave. Because if I'm going to include Marshfield and Stellwagen, I guess I'll include Duxbury.
So in the spirit of Kiefer Madness weirdness, you are of Bridgewater.
Yep.
Do you have any firsthand accounts of the Bridgewater Triangle and strange encounters that you've had?
No, I live in Bridgewater. I coached at Bridgewater State for 8 years. Jordan was there cheering me on for a few of them, by the way. But
really? Okay.
Yeah.
That is a Bridgewater Triangle encounter.
Yeah, no,
I
didn't know it at the time, but when I was coaching, she was one of the cheerleaders for like 2 of the seasons or 3 of them. Yeah.
Sick brag, bro.
So, there you go. But no, I guess that's the weirdest Bridgewater story I have. No Bridgewater Triangle. People
didn't,
talk
like,
about it.
She didn't sprout wings and jump up at the top of the pyramid or something? Like, does that ever happen at a Bridgewater football game?
I couldn't even tell you. I have no idea. Because they're behind us, like, when we're in the game. I never see them. But no, there's a lot of people that, like, Bridgewater Triangle. And we'll see people from outside of Bridgewater come visit to look at this this area.
Speaking of marketing, don't you think that they should do a better job? Everybody goes north to Salem for all the Halloween stuff. Shouldn't Bridgewater up their game to be a destination for the
weirdness? But I kind of like being left alone. I don't know if I want 10,000 people coming to check out the Bridgewater Triangle.
How much of it is UFO based?
I think a decent amount. And I know then people a lot say of it there's is like something that lives in there or something.
Yeah. What does Keith call them? They're like a certain amount. There's certain creature, like a winged creature.
Yeah, I couldn't tell you.
So in the Bridgewater area, this is not just something that people
I don't see
talk
like gargoyles flying around or anything.
They're fuzzy slippers and
stuff. No, I guess not. No, perhaps not. But no.
I think we need to both step up our marketing.
Yes.
And sit down with Fitzy and figure out how he has 1,000 beers on the South Shore named after him at every single brewery. and help out Bridgewater to become a little bit more of a tourist destination for the Halloween season.
The Fitzy School of Marketing?
Yeah. Because Salem is overdone at this point. Like, Salem is a nightmare from the very beginning of October.
I've never been.
You've never been in the...
No interest in it.
What about outside of the Halloween season? It's a lovely little city.
No, I'm not a big North Shore guy in general.
This is the most South Shore part of this entire thing.
Yeah, I don't know. I just don't.
Why?
I have to go all the way either through Boston or past Boston to get there. I don't know. And I'm not a big Cape Cod guy either. I like my area in Massachusetts. I don't really, and I'll go to Boston. I don't like to go that far.
The traffic in either direction terrifies me.
Yeah, especially in the summer.
So
it's brutal.
I don't partake in any of that. All right. Well, that was our little tread down Kiefer Madness with John Lyons.
I'm sure
Kiefer's
listening like, why is this guy talking? Get this guy out of here.
You did a wonderful job. I would like more personal encounters from the Bridgewater Triangle.
If I get abducted by aliens tonight, I'll tell you tomorrow. How about that?
Okay. I mean, that's where we would start the show 100%.
Okay.
Talking probes and such.
Okay.
But on the other side of this very, very quick break, we are going to get into a question that Tom Curran from NBC Sports Boston posed to one Vince Wilfork. He sat down with Vince Wilfork on his Patriots Talk podcast and asked a question that I think is a legit thing, not just about the Patriots, but about young NFL players, young athletes in general, what it means to be a leader when you're a young guy on the team, and whether guys on this Patriots team have this quality. We're going to get to that right after this break.
Hey there, cats and kittens. It's Brian from The Commercial Break, the mediocre comedy podcast where my best friend Chrissy and I attempt to make sense of the world. We talk about the absurd, the ridiculous, and the stuff no one asked for, like internet weirdos, pickup artists, and why everyone is obsessed with crystals and colonics. It's all gotta stop. The show is free, it's frequent, and it's probably not for everyone. You can go to tcbpodcast.com, subscribe at youtube.com/thecommercialbreak, or check out the show wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll see you on the next commercial break, and best to you.
When you do consider the notion of culture, as a leader, somebody has to be a dink. Are kids these days as well equipped to, these days, as well equipped to call each other out? Because you guys, once that culture, you know, because you come in, you got.
You are 100% right. Because now it's like you're trying to separate the two, my friend. In business, you know, like, yeah, we can party all night, but when times get tough or when you do something wrong, when I can't count on you, can I call you out? You understand?
Yep.
So that's a true leader. A true leader don't care about, I don't care about our friendship. When we on this field, we have one job. If you can't do this, find me somebody that can.
Still be my friend, though.
We can still be my friend. You know what I'm saying? But it's the respect.
Yeah.
It's respect. But when you have guys, and that's why I think Vrabel is going to be a great asset to these younger leaders, because he's going to tell them it's okay to call out your buddy. It's okay. You know, that's just what it is. If you can't call out your buddy for the sake of the team, you don't need to be here.
Vince Wilfork there with Tommy Curran on the Tommy Curran Patriots Talk podcast presented by NBC Sports Boston. Something that I think has been a little bit of an issue for the Patriots over this last several seasons. Do you have a guy in a leadership position who's going to hold others accountable and be willing to be the guy who yells at everybody and tells them your stuff's not up to standard? And on top of it, be somebody who has the natural respect of the rest of the team? And by the way, I love the beginning of the question. When my friend Tom Curran realizes that the question he's asking makes him sound like he's 90 years old or like 100 years old, and he's like, kids these days. But it's true, John. Like, it's true that there was an issue with Mac Jones where he wanted to be one of the guys. And there were occasions when, hey, he was fine yelling at Matt Patricia on the sidelines in front of everybody. He would go off on little Pop Douglas here and there. But ultimately, when it came to guys like Hunter Henry, Ramondre Stevenson, he didn't act like somebody who wanted to hold everybody up to this super high standard. He just wanted to be one of the guys. And I think going through this rebuild, it's going to be really important for not just Drake, But look, Gonzo's not a rah-rah guy. He's going to be your highest paid guy probably next season. And he's like a Stephon Gilmore, really quiet guy. I don't think there's anyone on this team that jumps out to me who's Vrabel-esque. People talk about how Mike Vrabel was like a coach when he was a Patriot. When he was on the team, he was smart enough. He would talk to people. He would get in guys' faces and say, you got to get with the program. And he would be snarky and funny about it. And he had the respect. I don't know that there's anybody outside of Drake who like naturally walks into that position. Maybe Jabril Peppers, but he's a safety. You know, like he's not your quarterback. He's not your top wide receiver.
And I think if you're going to be good, you need two or three of those guys on each side of the ball. Like you need five. And I know there's like five captains or whatever it is, but like you mentioned Vrabel, like it wasn't just Vrabel back then. Like it was Vrabel, Brewski, Brady, McGinnis.
And Brady grew into that.
And Brady did grow into it, but there was a group of guys that would do that. Like it felt like, I don't know how vocal Joey Andrews was, but he felt like a leadership type guy. Matt Light was that kind of guy that he would make fun of guys, but also to make a point to hold them accountable. And you look at the most recent Patriots, whether it was Edelman, McCourty, they always had those guys. And I think Jabril Peppers.
Slater was a great example, different type. But he got so much respect.
And when he said something to guys, everyone listened.
Right.
Like that's the key. Like it, I think the rah-rah thing is a little overrated. Like what it should be is that when you talk, everyone listens. And there's obviously going to be somebody that has to be vocal more consistently than others. But like Slater's a great example. Like he was leading the aw yeah thing at the end of every game. His style was different than Edelman's maybe or than other guys, but they were than McCourty's, but they were all leaders. And at that point, Brady was like 85 years old on the team. So but he was still a legend and whatever he did, people followed along. And I think you look at this team, like I do think Jabril Peppers is one of those guys, like a leader type guy. I think Spillane could be one of those guys.
Dude, Spillane's out there.
Rest of the defense, though.
Spillane is so intense.
And the rest of the defense, though, is a lot of quiet guys. And like offensively, like I think Will Campbell could be that guy, but he's a rookie. He's not going to be that guy now. He's going to have to grow into that. But I think he's got those tools. I think May has leadership tools, but they don't have enough guys, I think, with that mentality right now. Whether it's follow, like lead by example and follow, like maybe I think Morgan Moses is going to have to be that guy. And I think he's got the potential from everything I've heard from him speak and from what his teammates have said before. It sounds like he is that guy, but also like he's a new free agent signing. And even though he's a veteran, like he's still a new guy. Like all those other leaders we talked about were guys that had been here a year, two, three before they elevated. Now they're asking Morgan Moses and Will Campbell, who are new guys, to be leaders on that offense.
To me, it reminds me a little bit of the 2022 Celtics, where at that time, we're still looking at it. They're coming off of Brad Stevens kicking upstairs and saying, who's going to be, whose team is this? Like, is Tatum ready to take the reins and be the alpha dog? Or is it something split between him and Jaylen? You know, the questions around that. And it turns out the alpha dog in that team was Ime Udoka.
Yeah, and then Ime there was Udoka the Marcus Smart thing, like, because he
right.
was the quote-unquote leader.
Right, and that there was a bit of a chemistry issue at that point. But Ime Udoka was the one who held everybody in check. And I think when you hear Vince Wilfork at the end there talking about that's the importance of what Vrabel is, that's what Vrabel is. Like, I do think that that's part of what people weigh so heavily on Vrabel being part of this team, not just the program that he's bringing, but everybody expects him to be the one that not only establishes the standard, but holds other guys to it. I just don't know how you get Drake there, like in a natural way, to be somebody who everybody's almost deferential to. You know what I mean?
But like, I don't think he has to be a guy that is getting in guys' faces and yelling off. Like, if you look at the good quarter, like...
No, but he has to be... He can't BS, be nice guy.
Like, no, and that's fine. And
that's
I get
what
that.
Mac was.
But, like, I look at, like, Joe Burrow. He's not getting in guys' faces left and right, but you know if you play with him,
but Joe
there's
had
a
immediate
standard,
success. Like, after his that first season,
right.
His second season, he had immediate success.
And he's a guy, though, too, I think, you know, if you play with him, okay, there's a standard I have to live up to, or it's not going to end
because
well for
he
me.
Showed
and I
it
think
to
the
you.
Success, right? That
if,
that
if
is
May
part.
May has an 8-win season and he's got 3,700 yards and he's got 18 interceptions. Has he shown enough for guys who are vets to look at him and go, hey, there's got to listen to what this guy has to say? Like, he's setting the standard. Or can you only do that through winning if you're this young?
I think it's also how you win. Like, if they win 8 games, but May is awesome and he leads 3 game-winning drives and he's a big part of it, and the games they lose are, let's say some of them are 35-30, you know, and he's still playing well, then. But if they're losing games and he has 16, 18, 20 turnovers, then I think guys will look at him and be like, nah, I don't think so, bro. Like, I think some of it is how he plays. Not just that he's playing and winning or it's are you winning? And is he part of it? Like, is he, are you winning?
Like, is he
with
the
him?
Catalyst?
Is he a, and he doesn't even have to do it every week, but can there be 2 or 3 games here and there? Like, I mean, and not, I'm not trying to compare him directly to it, but our friend Tommy Curran will say one of the biggest moments for Brady in his first year was that overtime win against the Chargers.
And here's the thing, he's right? going to be compared.
I know, but
you
like,
know? Like,
just
when everybody's talking about
like,
who he is and, as a young guy, it's a comparison to Brady.
But even Joe Burrow, who I mentioned earlier, what really I think put him over the top is he went into Kansas City and won an AFC Championship game, a close game. Like, that's what, it wasn't just that they reached the Super Bowl, it's that he went against a great team. And he was the better guy that day and won. Like, that's, if you see that out of May, because I will say last year, May was better than Caleb Williams in the Bears win. How many other games was he actually the better quarterback? And I'm not trying to poo-poo him, but like, how many other, like, you could say he was better than, like I think he's a better player than Will Levis, but he wasn't better in that game against the Titans. He had a really bad game. Like, Stafford was better. Like, and we don't need to go through all of them, but it's just, right. It's something to think about. How many of those games were you like, oh, the guy in New England is the better player? And I didn't expect him to be. But I think this year, can you look at it early in the year? Like, if week 2 he plays better than Tua, even if they lose, but he plays better, I think that'll open some guys' eyes. Or if in week 4 he's much better than Bryce Young and you win, that'll open some guys. If he's toe-to-toe with Aaron Rodgers in week 3, I think that helps his case.
I think it's a little bit of a catch-22, where it's like he's got to be the leader, he's got to hold the standard, he's got to be able to call out guys on the team if they're not meeting the standard. But the success, the respect, I think mostly comes at that position at a very young age through success. So it's a catch-22. One feeds into the other, and hopefully it all just comes together very quickly for Drake May. We're going to take a very quick break on the other side. We're going to hear from Chris Cotillo of MassLife. He's on the ground in the Bronx for the Red Sox-Yankees 4-game series that kicks off tonight. We're going to ask him what we can expect, what to make of Abraham Toro getting DFA'd today, Richard Fitz coming up, what he may do in the bullpen, and, of course, what went wrong with the last 2 series, the homestand that the Red Sox just had, and if they can make up for it against the Yankees right after this very quick break.
Hey there, cats and kittens. It's Brian from The Commercial Break, the mediocre comedy podcast where my best friend Chrissy and I attempt to make sense of the world. We talk about the absurd, the ridiculous, and the stuff no one asked for, like internet weirdos, pickup artists, and why everyone is obsessed with crystals and colonics. It's all gotta stop. The show is free, it's frequent, and it's probably not for everyone. You can go to tcbpodcast.com, subscribe at youtube.com/thecommercialbreak, or check out the show wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll see you on the next commercial break, and best to you.